I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. The debate over health care has come back to the states, where members of Congress have been holding town hall meetings, or at least trying to. Some of those forums have gotten out of hand, with members of the audience shouting accusations and disrupting the proceedings. Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter has held several meetings this week, and he's gotten an earful. Here's what happened in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, earlier this week.
I am a Republican, but I am first and foremost, I'm a conservative. I don't believe this is just about health care. It's not about TARP. It's not about left and right. This is about the systematic dismantling of this country. I'm only 35 years old. I've never been interested in politics. You have awakened the sleeping giant. We are tired of this. This is why everybody in this room is so ticked off. I don't want this country turning into Russia, turning into a socialized country. My question for you is, what are you going to do to restore this country back to what our founders created according to the Constitution?
Last night at Penn State University, Specter reportedly hosted another angry town hall meeting. His Senate challenger Joe Sestak's town hall in Philadelphia yesterday was more civil. Now, Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri also held a public meeting this week on health care and warned the crowd that she didn't want to use her, quote, mother's voice. She ended with this.
Here's the sad part about this. We've been at this for an hour and a half, almost an hour and 45 minutes. And there are strong feelings in this room. And while there's been some people that have been impolite and hollered, by and large, we've been able to get through it, right? By and large, I think we've had a pretty good discussion about this bill and what's in it and what isn't and what people are upset about and what they aren't. Now, the sad thing is, I'll bet you a dollar, all they show on the news tonight is that what happened right there.
Well, today on Radio Times, we're going to talk with two experts about how to create meaningful and useful dialogue on difficult issues like health care. And let me introduce them to you. Peter Levine is research director of the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service at Tufts University, also director of the college's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. Peter Levine, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Martine Carcassonne, director of the Center for Public Deliberation at Colorado State University, and Associate Professor of Speech Communication. Martine Carcassonne, nice to have you with us as well. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let me begin with you, if I could, Martine Carcassonne. There is nothing new about members of Congress, elected officials, holding town hall meetings with their constituents or members of the public. Why has this become such a battleground on health care?
No, I think this is just a particular situation. It's been getting worse and worse with just the way our political communication is set up, with just kind of a two-party system, which creates a zero-sum kind of initiative that anything that's bad for the other side is good for you. So it fosters typical bad communication processes. It fosters things like demonizing the other side and simplifying issues and framing things in certain ways. So I think now that we have a media that more and more have become politicized themselves, people, whether it's through the internet or so many different cable channels, so people can get news from people that just think like them, and it creates that polarization. So I think a lot of people are going into this with kind of very specific points of view of how the world works and very little real understanding of the opposing side, because they kind of developed a caricature of the opposing side. So I think that creates that sense of distrust and polarization that we're really kind of seeing manifested now in these meetings.
Let me turn to you, Peter Levine. Why do you think they've become such a battleground?
Yeah, I agree with Martine that this is just sort of the latest sign of kind of degeneration of the public dialogue. I think healthcare does have some hot-button aspects to it. I mean, at some level, you are making choices, even if the choice is not to do any bill at all. That's a choice that affects people's lives, and then make choices between, let's say, end-of-life care versus preventative care for young people, for young families or children. That's a huge moral choice that goes very deep. And I think the other thing is that conservatives have done something that is not inappropriate, but it's high stakes, which is they've made this into a kind of referendum on the role of government and the base, and made the stakes seem very high that this is about expanding the role of government to some very dangerous degree. I mean, they could have said instead that this is a lousy bill because it's too complicated and kind of wasteful and has lots of moving parts and nobody really understands it, and that they're in favor of healthcare reform too, and that this is but this isn't a good bill. But they're not, at least some of the loudest voices on the right are not saying that. They're saying that this is a kind of a basic watershed moment for American Republic, as the woman said on the segment you aired, and that, of course, raises the temperature.
And we're talking about words like big government, Martine Carcassonne.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, the way our political system works now, at least for the, in terms of political communication, it rewards kind of these phrases and these attacks and demonizations. So we're seeing big farm now, too. You know, you're wanting to find these devil terms to kind of attack people. And both sides kind of have their terms. You know, insurance companies are being kind of demonized, and government is being demonized, and all these different type of things. And part of that is we're seeking easy solutions. And if we can kind of put it all on one devil, that that's the problem. If we just get rid of them, then everything will work well. You know, that's just kind of the silver bullet that we're all kind of hoping for psychologically, and that our political system with it, you know, kind of feeds and kind of rewards those, that kind of communication patterns.
I wonder to you, Peter Levine, does it matter that some of these protests have been organized by groups that do oppose any kind of change to the healthcare system? And I think it's clear when you go to some of these forums or you see some of the footage from some of these forums that these look like individual people who are just frightened and anxious about what's happening to their country, as they say.
Yeah, well, that's, of course, become a kind of sideline controversy, is how much of this is authentic and how much of it is ginned up. And I don't know. I actually would tend not to want to jump to the conclusion that it's been organized or artificially created, because that seems to sort of diminish the voice of the people in the room. I mean, in the segment you aired, you know, the challenge from the floor to Senator Spector was something I happened not to agree with, but I thought she was saying something cogent that she had a right probably to say. I think we can improve the way public dialogue plays out, but I guess what I'm saying is I don't want to assume that that woman who you showed, let us hear, was sort of sent there by some interest group when she may have been quite authentically voicing her own opinion.
And Martine, we have a right to protest in this country, do we not?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think attempts to quiet these voices or to design processes that keep them out or, you know, establish ground rules that give you the right to say, hey, you know, we can kick you out of the room. I think that kind of plays into their hands. Not only does it, you know, violate the principle of freedom of speech, mm-hmm. which I think would be particularly important in a town hall that's hosted by U.S. representative or senator, but I think it also plays into their hands, because they're, you know, if there is this manufactured anger, thing like that, doing, you know, those type of tactics, I think would backfire. But I also agree with Peter that I think that jump that many people are making of saying, oh, this is all manufactured, this is all paid operatives or whatever, is another one of those easy jumps, too easy jump to make, to think there really isn't people that are angry about this or have significant concerns that it has to be kind of manufactured or paid for. So while that might be happening in some cases, I think there's certainly a lot of genuine anger and concern that that needs to be part of the discourse.
I was looking at the two clips of Claire McCaskill and Arlen Specter at these town hall meetings, and they were so different in the way they handled it. Let me toss this back to you, Martine Carcassonne. And Claire McCaskill essentially treated the protesters as if respectfully, but at the same time she talked about using her mother's voice as if she was dealing with a classroom of unruly, you know, ninth graders. And I wonder, as an approach, whether you think that's more effective than either arguing with someone or trying to kick someone out of a meeting.
I think part of it goes back to what was the purpose of the meeting in the first place. So the purpose of the town hall meeting was for the representative to explain their point of view, you know, so it's more from the representative to the people. That's a very different situation than if the purpose of the meeting was, I want to hear my constituents, and I'm coming here to listen and hear the public voice. You know, so was a representative there as a advocate to convince them why I want to vote for this and why you should support it, is different than they're just trying to hear everything. So I think that becomes part of it. And I think the other kind of variable you have to think about is, going back to what we were just talking about, if it was manufactured or paid, or you know, the people that are there, even if they weren't that strategic, but they're saying, you know, we're going to disrupt this process. We just kind of want people to know that we're angry rather than want people to know what our opinion on healthcare, specific parts of the healthcare bill are. As a facilitator, and part of what I do is I train facilitators to be impartial resources for these sorts of meetings. You know, there's lots of tactics to deal with anger when people have a real opinion. There's not too many tactics to deal when people are there to disrupt the process, mm-hmm. right? So I think, you know, if it was genuine, and again, by presumption, I would assume that that is genuine anger, then doing what, you know, listening to them and trying to diffuse it and trying to allow them to vent and try to get it to a deeper level, there's lots of things facilitators and moderators can do to kind of get that out and help that, you know, have that really make a contribution to the discussion.
Let me get you to respond to that, Peter Levine. Sounded like you wanted to say something.
Oh, I think I was just laughing in agreement with Martine. But, you know, one thing that's going on is that this whole word town meeting is something of a misnomer and a little bit of almost an offensive one, I think. Because a real town meeting is a group of citizens as peers coming together to make a decision or discuss. You know, the traditional New England town meeting is an actual governing body. But the town meetings that we're used to from both the presidential campaigns and congressional summers is really a Q&A session where everyone expects that what the representative is doing is selling the plan, and people are reacting, and they react one by one coming up to a microphone. And that's a format that is, first of all, very easy to manipulate in game and get your own people out. Both sides are doing that. It's a format that's kind of disempowering, I think, to the public, because it suggests that the only thing they can do if they don't like what's going on is just sort of yell. And it's sort of underneath it all is a concern, I think, that you know, that supposedly we're gathered together to reason, but actually the bill is being written in Congress and you don't really have any impact on it. So, you know, I think it probably is a good idea to treat the people in the room who come up to you on the microphone with respect and to call for civility, but I think the format is set up in such a way that you're almost guaranteed to get some serious incivility.
And if I can add to that.
Yeah, go ahead, Martine.
Yeah, no, very much agree. And the basic public hearing model or the town hall model as these people kind of use it, or even city council meetings and school board meetings, are designed to benefit the extreme in some way. Or not designed to do that, but that's, I mean, the end result is that the loudest voices are the ones that get heard, and typically the majority voices in the middle don't even show up because it becomes a shouting match. So when I was asked, you know, what would you do if you were running one of these meetings? You know, one of the first things I would do is split people up into smaller groups and have the citizens talking to each other. Because if you just have a big audience in one microphone, you know, that's not really communication. It's individual people expressing individual opinions, which is part of democracy. But citizens gathered together talking and listening to each other, that's really what we're looking for in terms of how do we solve complex problems like healthcare.
And we're almost up on a break here, but you would get almost no media coverage for an event like that, right, Martine?
Right, and that was one of the clips that you played, right, that said, you know, they had a lot of good discussion and probably had a couple of blow-ups, and the media is going to focus on the blow-ups. I think, you know, the kind of work that I do of trying to have serious conversations and deliberative democracy and collaborative governance and all that kind of stuff, and we have a lot of barriers to our work. One, I think, is human nature, because we want things to be simple. We don't want things to be so complicated. One is the political system, especially with a two-party system. You know, impartials just don't fit very well in there. And then third is the media, which is tends going to focus on conflict and in itself becoming more politicized.
We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Martine Carcassonne, Peter Levine joining us today on Radio Times. Stay with us. Much more to talk about. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Through September 30th, PAFA presents Public Treasures, Private Visions, Hudson River School Masterworks from the Metropolitan Museum of Art and Private Collections, Sweeping Views of the Hudson River and the American West, Paintings of Turbulent Storms at Erupting Volcanoes, and other works from the Met and private collectors. For details, 215-972-7600 or pafa.org.
You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. It's 10:20. Ahead in the second hour at 11, author Neil White talks about how being incarcerated in Louisiana with people with Hansen's disease or leprosy changed his life. His memoir is called In the Sanctuary of Outcasts. Our forecast for today, rain, thunderstorms likely. This afternoon's high around 75 degrees. Clearing after midnight, low 66. And tomorrow, intervals of clouds, some breaks of sunshine, high reaching 83.
Horrible weather.
The brown acid is not specifically too good.
Bad drugs.
New York State Thruway's closed, man.
Too many people.
What we have in mind is breakfast in bed for 400,000.
It should have been a disaster. Instead, it became Woodstock.
It's a new dawn.
I'm David Dye. Join me for Woodstock, 40 years on.
Saturday night at 10 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Legislators have been meeting with their constituents at town hall meetings on health care, and they've been met by heated debates and in some cases, disruptive protesters. We're talking with Martine Carcassonne and Peter Levine about how to create meaningful and useful dialogue when there are tough issues at stake. Let me just quickly reintroduce them. Peter Levine, Research Director of the John M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service at Tufts University, also Director of the College's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. Martine Carcassonne, Director of the Center for Public Deliberation at Colorado State University, also Associate Professor of Speech Communication. Let me toss something else out, and then I do want to get some callers in on the conversation. And this is to you, Peter Levine. We're talking in this case with these town hall meetings about our healthcare system, which is enormously complicated and, as we know, enormously expensive. But what you see at some of these town hall meetings is people talking about, you know, not wanting government to be involved in their health care decisions. Then they're asked by the moderator, how old are you? They say, well, I'm 64 years old. And they ask them, how do they like Medicare? And they say, I like it fine. In many ways, we're having a conversation about something that many people do not understand.
Right, that's right. So, so you hear people saying things like, I don't want government involved in my Medicare or something. And obviously, Medicare is a federal program. I guess my sense is that you're never going to be able to cut through all the clutter of competing claims and other topics that are in the media if you try to send out a message that's informative to people that changes their mind. There's just too many other messages floating around. I know that there's going to be a lot of advertising in defense of the House bill, and I guess that's probably smart for the proponents of the House bill, but it's probably not going to work. What does work is when people talk with each other in a serious way over time. So the kind of forums that Martine organizes and understands would work. I mean, so if a small group of citizens were sitting around a table, somebody says, I don't want government involved, and someone else says, you get Medicare, and that first person says yes, and they learn. They learn from each other.
Well, in this environment, then, Martine Carcassonne, and we're not going to break the country into small groups, I'm sure, as much as you would like that to happen. And if we're stuck with or we have these town hall meetings, is it possible to use that as a place to actually educate people about the system that we have and, of course, the possible changes to the system?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, some of the things that Peter talked about, we know there's better ways of trying to solve complex problems and have these difficult discussions. And we have lots of material on that. And, you know, there's groups like America Speaks and National Issues Forum and Everyday Democracy and Public Agenda that do a lot of this work. And there's actually increasing capacity. I mean, I started my center 3 years ago, been involved in this work for maybe 5 years. And it's just incredible how much it's increased in capacity just in the last 5 years as people get more and more frustrated, realizing we need to have better conversations. Democracy requires pretty good communication, particularly between kind of decision makers, experts, and the public. Those three entities have to work together, and the way the current system works, it doesn't work that way. Like I was saying earlier, it creates disincentives for good communication in lots of ways. So we need to figure out ways of getting people together. Most of the kind of events I run and all those organizations I mentioned, you know, some of them are small groups, some of them are large groups. America Speaks has 5,000, you know, they did the big California Speaks process down out in California where they had multiple cities at the same time. I forget how many thousand people were involved. But it requires kind of an impartial, you know, impartial resource to develop the background material, to frame it in a certain way, so the citizens can kind of engage those issues. It requires facilitators to help, and, you know, so it does take a lot of capacity. But I think part of the important role right now is start building that capacity. And I think the more people realize the current system's not working, the easier that will be do. And I think what these town hall meetings are doing is more and more legislators are realizing the current system's not working.
But people, don't you find that people, at least maybe initially, that people mostly think that they're right? Whatever it is that they believe they're right.
Yeah, but I think, you know, a process that gives them a microphone and basically all the process does is let them express their opinion and then sit down, then just feeds into that. But a process that gets them in face, because again, we build up these people that think differently than us, we assume they have these evil motives or they're just completely ignorant, because that's what we hear from the two sides when they're just preaching to their choir. When you get in a circle of real people and you hear someone across that is one of your neighbors that is explaining their opinion and you actually hear it from them rather than hearing it from a soundbite or hearing it from talk radio, then they start realizing it's a lot easier to listen, and the process works in that way. So it's not that people completely change their opinion. What the research shows is they don't change their opinion so much. They change their opinion about people that think differently than them.
Oh, that's interesting.
They move from those people are ridiculous or have negative, evil motives to, oh, I think they're wrong, but I can see why they think that way now. Democracy works a lot better when we think the people that think differently than us have a reason for that. Now we can have a conversation with them. So that's part of what we're trying to do with these processes.
Peter, it seems to me, though, one of the hardest things to do is actually to listen to somebody else, especially when you don't agree with them on the issues.
Yeah. I have a quote that I use in my work from a New York governor from a long time ago, but it was, if I remember it right, the art of listening in the United States is a competitive exercise in which the first person to take a breath is deemed the listener. and it's just that notion that, yeah, we don't listen. We listen sometimes to attacks. So we're trying to find the one flaw. Right, because if you can find one thing to attack, you don't have to bother about listening to the rest of it, or we're just listening for our turn. And ask what of our processes and the role of the ground rules and facilitators or whatever. It's just really get people to listen to each other and ask each other questions and realize. And what those bring out, which is kind of one of the most important things of my work, which we're not seeing in the public discourse, is the notion of tough choices and trade-offs. A diverse democracy requires us to make some tough choices. And the political system and political communication basically avoid those tough choices or try to frame them in a very easy way. They want things to be kind of good versus evil and those type of things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the flaws with the healthcare debate right now is both sides are taking more of a PR perspective and just trying to sell the good parts of the bill rather than really clearly lay it out and say, you know what, no matter what, we got some tough choices. We can't have it all, and we need to come together as a community, as a nation, and work through those and struggle through those.
Well, Martin Carcassonne, you and Peter Levine, make a very cogent case for how to have a more rational and informative discussion about healthcare. But I just don't see that happening in today's environment, whether it's the media or whether the kind of suspiciousness that there is about government, about members of Congress, about the role of lobbyists. I just don't see how you diffuse the situation, Martin, and then we'll get some callers in on the conversation.
Well, I think a lot of what my work is I kind of have one foot in the current culture, trying to make it work as best as possible, and kind of one foot outside of it, trying to change kind of the bigger, do these more theoretical, developing, deliberate democracy type of things. So there's a lot of little things that you can do. Now, part of what happened with my work, my dissertation was on presidential politics, and I shifted and I focused primarily on local politics or regional politics. Because that's where you can really get people and get involved in, school boards or significant local decision makers. So in terms of figuring out how to get this to work at a national level, that's a much more difficult barrier to pass.
What do you think, Peter Levine?
Right. I mean, I was going to inject some optimism by saying that the state of Oregon.
You're allowed.
Okay, great. The state of Oregon did a remarkable job, actually, in a program called Oregon Health Decisions to come up with an expansion of their health coverage through public discussions, and the discussions went on for several years and were very elaborate and dealt with extremely difficult issues, whether to cover abortion, for example, but also things like, what they were doing was making additional insurance available to low-income people, they had to decide what to cover, and there were huge trade-offs between preventative care and end-of-life care, and they managed to settle those issues in deliberative discussions and write a bill that was popular and remains in course, I think, although it may have diminished lately. But I guess I was going to say that to show that people can do it, but I do agree that the situation has probably gotten worse. It's become more difficult to do that kind of thing. It'd be more likely that somebody would organize to deliberately destroy that process, which I don't think happened in Oregon. And then I also agree with Martin that it's harder to do at the national level, partly because of the national media.
I suspect
the Oregon thing was actually kind of low profile. If anything, they probably struggled to get any media attention. But in some ways, that was better because they were under the radar.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and I do want to get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking about whether it's possible to build consensus on health care. We're not talking so much about the specifics of health care legislation, but how do you create an environment, a place where people can actually talk to each other about some of these difficult issues. The voice you just heard is Peter Levine, research director of the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service, and that's at Tufts University. Also director of the College's Center for Information and Research research on civic learning and engagement. He's the author of several books, including The Future of Democracy, Developing the Next Generation of American Citizens. Also joining us by telephone, Martin Karkason, director of the Center for Public Deliberation at Colorado State University, and he's also an associate professor of speech communication. And lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. How do you think we can create more meaningful and useful dialogues on tough issues like health care? Let me get Jason from Reading to join our conversation. Jason, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say that I noticed most of the ways the protesters are framed are in the context of they're either plants, you know, or somebody pushing some sort of a agenda that has something not to do with the health care, or just plain ignorant. Now, I know you just made the example of the people being ignorant about Medicare, and okay, I concede that's an example of ignorance. But in general, I don't think they're ignorant. I think people are just angry. I think they don't like the direction this is going. I know exactly what I would like to see happen from the Congress, and this ain't it. And they're coming in, and they're angry about what's being submitted, and they're expressing that, and they're angry in general where the country's going.
Well, let me ask you, since you said you're angry as well, Jason, what are you angry at? I'm curious, and then we'll hear from our guests.
I'm angry at, I think people are talking and through various forms and saying, hey, this is not what we want. We said from the beginning we wanted controls on the costs. We wanted controls of our costs, and we wanted readily accessible health care. This is not what you're giving us. Please give us what you promised us, or, you know, try to do that, and it's like we're doing something entirely different. Everything we're doing has nothing to do with controlling the costs.
Even though there's talk about controlling the costs and trying to figure out how to make decisions that reduce the costs or things like medical records, putting them on computers as a way of reducing costs, that doesn't really speak to what you're talking about?
That doesn't speak to what I'm talking about, because I think in the long range we're going to end up with less options, less competition means greater cost. I think in framed in one way, those things will result in minor cost reductions offset by larger cost increases just by a general lack of competition.
Fair enough. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And I know neither of you are experts on healthcare legislation. It's not really the focus of the show. But I think Jason's point, which is that people maybe are using some of these forums to express their anger and frustration. I'll put this to you, Peter Levine, just about where the country is going from here, where they think the country is going.
Right. I think actually Martine and I were both on the same page right at the beginning of the show in not wanting to dismiss the critics. I thought that the strong, angry critics that were aired on the NPR segment were actually making cogent points, mm-hmm. and they're part of the dialogue. So I'm partly a little suspicious that, in fact, the press is finding the kind of outrageous comments that are either inflammatory or dumb and kind of replaying them constantly. And there are some dumb comments, and I'm sure there are some on all sides. So I think that might be happening a little bit. But I also think for reasons that we've been talking about, the format is very kind of alienating. So, for example, I'm kind of unsure about a lot of this healthcare stuff. I'm not on your show as an expert on it, and I'm actually not. For example, I don't have a good answer to the caller's question. But the last thing I would do to find out more would be to go to a healthcare forum with a member of Congress. I would feel that it was going to be an uncivil and unpleasant context, that I was going to be uncomfortable and unhappy, and I wouldn't imagine I could learn anything. So I think our main topic is how do we create forums in which you can really hash out those issues. So what the caller suggested is a cogent point. I don't know if it's right or not. I would love to have a discussion about it. I'd love to have other points of view on it, but I'm not going to get that in a town hall meeting.
Do you agree with that, Martin?
Yeah, and one thing I'll add, you know, earlier you mentioned kind of one of the things that Peter and I are trying to do is have more rational discussions, and I actually tend to avoid that term rational discussions, because a lot of what we want people to have emotion, we want people to be angry, we want to hear stories, so it's not like we want to get people together and then, okay, we're all going to be, you know, talk very rationally about this and just stick to the facts and things like that. We invite those type of things. But we create a process in where we can use that emotion, and you know, so if angry people show up to my meetings, you know, as long as they're not completely you know, out of their mind anger, that's a positive. We can talk about that. We can hear from other people, and we can get people to react to that. And that's, again, kind of the example of a town hall meeting is not set up to do that. It's just set up to allow people to express their anger, not to be able to turn that anger to something productive for the conversation.
Well, I wanted just picking up on that, and again, this is going back to some of the town hall meetings, and I realize this is not this is probably a minority point of view, but nonetheless, it's out there that there are people who don't believe that Barack Obama is an American citizen. Now, Martine Carcassonne, if that comes up in one of your smaller groups, and they also don't like the direction of the country, and they talk about big government and socialism, and you know the whole Megilla there. But if that happens in one of your sessions, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a tough question. It kind of depends. I mean, we've been pretty lucky in 3 years that we've been running events that we haven't had any, you know, significantly difficult people, you know, from completely kind of out of context in a way. But again, part of that notion of having smaller groups, you know, just the people, I've actually had people call me before events and say, and ask me questions about the event, and when they realize it's not going to be a big crowd that they get to have a microphone, mm-hmm. they say, okay, thanks, and I don't think they show up, right? So part of it is just the normative, you know, it's almost kind of self-policing in a way, that people realize that seems so out of context in that place that it doesn't make as much sense.
But nonetheless, I mean, there are those people out there who believe that, and I think for many of them, they see whatever changes are going to happen to the healthcare system as part of a country that they don't recognize. Peter Levine?
Right, and it's not a really tiny number of people. I don't know if you saw in the North Carolina poll of Republicans in North Carolina, an outright majority think that Barack Obama is not a citizen, which means they also think he's illegitimately president. And I don't mean to make a false or cheap equivalence, but I think a lot of Democrats thought that George Bush had stolen two elections in a row, and there was a poll showing a significant number of Democrats thought that he had advanced knowledge of the attacks on 9/11, which means that, in a sense, they thought he was a mass murderer or accessory to mass murder. So there's a level of of anger and polarization that is difficult to deal with. I mean, it's not just a question of thinking that maybe Obama's healthcare plan, as the last caller said, is not well conceived because it doesn't, maybe it won't control costs, but actually think that the president is illegitimate, that the election is, because obviously it's unconstitutional for him to be president if he's not a citizen, so that it's totally, he's totally out of, beyond the pale, and that's hard to deal with. I think we're seeing more and more of that, at least relative to the last 20 years. I mean, in the past of American history, there's been plenty of that degree of polarization.
We're about a minute away from our first break here, but just picking up on that, or I should say second break here, to you, Peter Levine. But does information then trump emotion?
I don't believe, again, on the same page with Martine, I don't really believe that what we're trying to aim for is pure information and rational and turning people into kind of ideal legislators wrapped in togas having a civilized discussion. I think emotion's appropriate. I think emotion's appropriate. It's just that when it's very personalized and it really is about writing somebody out of the political process entirely, saying that Barack Obama doesn't have any legitimacy as president, that's hard.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation and get some more callers in on the conversation. That's Peter Levine, Research Director of the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service at Tufts University. Martine Carcassonne, Director of the Center for Public Deliberation at Colorado State University. Both of them joining us today on Radio Times to talk about how to create meaningful and useful dialogue on tough issues. And we are using some of these more contentious town hall meetings as a springboard for our conversation. We got a full bank of calls here, and we'll go back to our callers after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Rosenbach Museum and Library supports WHYY and encourages listeners to visit 21stCenturyAbe.org, where Abraham Lincoln's legacy is explored through music, comedy, videos, and scholarly commentary. Visitors can contribute their thoughts about Abe online, followed by a visit to the Rosenbach Museum, where rare Lincoln manuscripts, including his 1864 Baltimore address, are on view through August 30th, 215-732-1600 for details.
It's 10:40. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY-FM. Ahead in the second hour at 11, Neil White talks about how being incarcerated in Louisiana with people with Hansen's disease or leprosy changed his life. His memoir is called In the Sanctuary of Outcasts. Today's forecast, showers, the chance of thunderstorms. This afternoon's high only 75 degrees. Down to 66 overnight under partially clearing skies. By tomorrow, intervals of clouds, some breaks of sunshine, high 83.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. An Iraqi businessman opens a nightclub in Baghdad, but his dancers still have to stay covered up till they get safely inside. Also, is Asia rising? A scholar looks behind the headlines at the financial challenges for China. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and let me get Tom from State College to join our conversation. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
You're
welcome. I would just like to point out that I think this is a return to good old American democracy. I think the 8 years of the Bush administration, the way they screened their town hall meetings, there was no one that disagreed with them, so it was just a jingoistic joy fest. I think, although I'm one of the 3 in 4 Americans that think that a public option is necessary for health insurance reform, I think let's let them speak. It's disappointing that they've turned into this rage fest. They're being stocked with busloads of people that aren't locals. We were unable to get into the State College meeting with Senator Specter because the busloads of people from out of town showed up at 5 a.m. in the morning to get in line. So when we showed up a half hour before the meeting, there was well over 4 times the number of people that were admitted to the room. So although I disagree with the majority of people that are speaking out at these meetings, I think it's a good return to American democracy, and I think it shows that the Democrats are willing to listen to the other side, whereas the Bush administration and his cronies were unwilling to listen to anyone that disagreed with them on any issue without calling them unpatriotic. So.
Tom, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. An interesting perspective. Martin Carcassonne, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone, or at least the two of us, aren't saying we should let them speak. You know, part of the problem is that they're not letting other people speak. Right, so certainly vigorous debate is something that we all support, and we've been talking a lot about making sure we let them say their piece and hopefully kind of turn that into something productive for the conversation. But I think the difficulty, and part of this again is the design of the meetings, is if people are there intent to shout other people down and just heckle and things like that, then you're not actually having that any kind of discourse there.
And Peter, I notice that when President Obama has his health care town forums, people are not yelling and screaming at the President of the United States. Now, he says that he hasn't screened out his critics. But do you think because of his position as the president that he gets a different status, a different response from members of the audience?
I actually was wondering why the presidential forum in Portsmouth was more polite. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, one possibility is that they are screening. I don't know. I would have thought, actually, that there'd be plenty of people who wanted to yell at him. But I would just like to acknowledge the caller's perspective. I mean, I think that one way to put it is I think passionate opposition to the bill is legitimate and is probably better than apathy. A lot of our work at my center is about trying to encourage civic participation by young people, and I'd much rather that they were all mad about things than that they were totally uninterested. So but I just think you can do it better because there are real costs to the kind of rhetoric we have right now in terms, in part, of I mean, the worst cost maybe is that it just forces out other more moderate perspectives. As I said before, I wouldn't go to a town meeting because I just would hate it there, and I think that's a cost we have to worry about.
But it seems that the critics of health care legislation are more organized than supporters. Peter?
Well, they're more organized around the town meetings so far. I guess we've been reading about, just in the media, about things are rolling out now on the other side, including a huge TV advertising campaign and a big union-backed grassroots campaign. So it may be that it's like a war in the battle of the August town meetings. It looks like the opponents of reform seem to have won, but the war's not over.
Yeah, those quiet days of August, right?
Right.
Tom, thanks for the call. Let me get Olivia from Winmore to join our conversation. Hi, Olivia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I know that you said the behaviors are maybe not explicitly organized, but I wondered if you could comment on how much they're influenced by the fears that are propagated by Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and groups like that or media like that.
Martin Carcassonne, do you want to take that? And of course, there's been this back and forth about death panels and some pretty inflammatory and incorrect language. What do you think, Martin?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, that you know, the way it's set up right now, it creates incentives for that kind of those kind of tactics. Tactics that work to fire up your base, that they're essentially preaching to the choir, that often misrepresent or at least simplify difficult issues. Because right now, from a kind of an interest group model, you know, just get people to the meeting on your side, and you're just kind of getting those groups, and you're just trying to build a big enough coalition to hopefully have 51% so you get the vote. And just, I think at least from what I know of solving complex problems in a diverse community, those processes don't work. You know, we focus so much sometimes on passing the bill and getting the coalition and using whatever tactics you can, most of them pretty negative, to get out the vote. But then even after the vote, when most of the work is done afterwards, implementation, if you have 49% of the country kind of hoping something fails, it's pretty likely it's going to fail.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of the work that we're trying to do in kind of collaborative governance and collaborative problem solving is you need to bring different people. And we have plenty of case studies that show that this works much better with complex issues. So that's a lot of what I'm trying to do, you know, coming from I'm a communication professor, is how do we kind of change the incentives that reward better communication rather than reward bad communication?
Well, I'm thinking of even that phrase, death panel, and I was looking at the legislation, and I won't even read the language on the air, which refers to, you know, having a consultation between a patient and their physician or practitioner about life-sustaining treatments. I mean, how do you counter something like a death panel with an actual description about what's in some of this legislation? Martin?
Well, part, I mean, you saw Obama try to do that last night with that specific example, right, to kind of a little talk through. But again, you're in an environment that if it's a kind of a competing PR perspective to try to sell, and it's more of a marketing kind of tactic, that, okay, come up with any kind of message that works rather than a message that actually contributes positively to the conversation. So you just have a lot of back and forth, right? So Obama spent a lot of time last night trying to dispel a lot of misrepresentations, but then I see in a paper, you know, a lot of responses on how a lot of things he said were misrepresentations, and you just kind of go back and forth, and that leads to what Peter was talking about, apathy, because people are saying, well, if we can't believe what anyone's saying, then why should I even be part of this process?
Olivia, thanks for the call. Let me get Bob from Hatfield to join our conversation. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm interested to see the parallel in the rancor in the town hall meetings with the rancor in Congress. And the parallel is that you see the people shouting for and against in the town hall meetings, and then again you ask them, and they don't really seem to understand what they're supporting or what they're opposing. And then you see your congressman and your senator stand up saying why you have to vote for or have to oppose this bill, and then they haven't heard the bill either. It seems to me that almost any important subject for the American people to form a consensus, you have to really dumb it down considerably. And in this situation, it's got to come down to how much is this going to cost me to have a public option? And if they say the bill in America was $2.2 trillion for health care or $7,000 a person, and if they think Obama's plan can cut the cost by, say, outrageously optimistic 50%, that's still $15,000 for a family of four. You know, how is that going to get paid? How much tax is that going to take out of each person's paycheck, and then you'd be able to form a consensus for or against.
Well, Bob, I appreciate the call, and our first caller also had questions about cost, and I wonder, Peter Levine, his original point having to do with the rancor in Congress about this issue just sort of playing out in town forums across the country. Do you think there's some truth to that?
Yeah, I guess a couple of quick comments. One is that our leaders don't model good deliberative discussions. That's true of Congress, and that's true of the talk shows and so on. So that's one of the problems. Although I think there's more, in some ways, there's more substantive conversation in Congress, for example, in the committees, than gets covered. So people are actually appreciate how much substantive conversation there is. But Martine is right that once the members of Congress go on the road, all the incentives are for them to act obnoxiously. And so they model bad behavior. But the other thing is, I'd just like to say, I think these issues are incredibly complicated, and there's a huge technical aspect to it, which none of us can understand. But what the public is best at is the value choices. So, you know, are we willing to pay more in order to get everybody covered? That's a value question that we do have a legitimate voice on. Now, the problem is that once you get into the actual bill, the debate becomes technical, and people say, for example, that it won't cover everybody or it won't save money, and then those are economic questions, and it makes our eyes glaze over, and we don't know what what's true.
Well, Martine, I mean, I think legitimately people want information that no one can really give them. I mean, no one can say definitively, yes, the CBO and others have come up with some kind of a price tag for changing the healthcare system. But, you know, then you've got a counter study that comes out a couple of days later. And I think that just feeds the kind of anxiety and the questions that the public has about the future of healthcare and their place in it.
Yeah, I think going back to an earlier point, democracy requires good communication. And, I mean, think about it. What resources do we have for good information right now that's not politicized or in some way? We don't have very many of those. Right? And that's part of kind of the people that are doing the work that I'm trying to do are trying to develop it. That's part of our job is to how do we provide good background information? How do we frame this? And I wouldn't say we dumb things down. Peter's right. The public can kind of deal with value choices. And we can frame things in a certain way that really get at the heart of the issue and those trade-offs and those type of things. In all the work that people do, show the public can do that. They can have some pretty substantive conversations. And you can actually bring some technical details in if you have the time, but there's certain work that the public can certainly do if you frame it right. But you need those high-quality sources of information that are going to be able to lay things out. And we don't have as many of those as we need. So that's part of the capacity building that we're trying to do in this field.
And just picking up on that, I mean, the idea that there are millions of people in this country who do not have health insurance. I mean, to frame the issue as a kind of what do we believe in as Americans? Do we believe that all people should be covered or not, Martine?
I'm not quite sure what.
Well, I mean, if these are some of the issues, and if we need to have some kind of a discussion that gets to some of the issues, but also acknowledges some of the fears, the concerns, the anxieties about the future of healthcare, it's sort of framing things in a way that the people can say, "Gosh, I'm an American. I believe that everyone should be covered by health insurance."
Yeah, so I mean, that's certainly one of the beliefs, and you can kind of focus on that, but. There's trade-offs there, right? So if we're saying everyone's going to be covered, I mean, we don't have the resources for that, right? So that's part of what I think the selling of the bill, one of the problems with it is, again, they're not focusing on the tough choices. So they're saying, we're going to cover everybody, the costs are going to go down, it's not going to contribute to the deficit, we're not going to deal with end-of-life issues, people who have pre-existing conditions are not going to get canceled. How do we do all that? Right. So the conversation has to be, okay, we want all these things. We can't have all of them. We need to struggle with this and figure out how we make these trade-offs together. But we don't get those kind of conversations inherently with our political system. You know, it's more of a PR perspective. Okay, let me focus on all the good things about the bill and hope we don't talk to the bad things. The opposite side is just talking about the bad things, not the good things. And we never really get any clash.
Peter Levine, just picking up on that, I mean, and there's some pressure to come to some kind of consensus on this particular issue of healthcare insurance or healthcare legislation. Based on the conversation that we've had, are we going to come to some kind of consensus on this issue, do you think, Peter?
Well, actually, consensus is a very high standard. I'm not sure you can expect or should expect consensus. And actually, some degree of disagreement and even angry disagreement seems appropriate. That's going back to the caller who said this anger was a good sign of engagement. And after all, we give to our political system the things that we strongly disagree about. When we all agree, we don't have to deal with
talk
the issues
it.
In politics. So I don't really believe in consensus, but I do think that you can have a debate which is full of misleading information, makes people mad at each other, as Martine said, makes it more difficult that for the actual policy that gets passed to really work because 49% of the public hates it and wants to destroy it, versus a process in which there's at least mutual understanding, people have some shared values, even though they disagree. That would be what we need to aim for.
Let me get to Barbara from, and Bob, thanks for the call, Barbara from Glenmore to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Barbara, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Most
of this has been about the national conversation. I'm wondering if Mr. Parkasana, I think is his name, could comment on local and regional issues. My school district community is embroiled in a mess now, two sides, people yelling at microphones, and I don't know how we as a community can move forward, and wondered if you could comment on that.
And this is a local school board issue, Barbara, in your neighborhood, so to speak?
Yes, it's a local school board issue. The community is divided. The school board itself is divided. And meetings have now degenerated into one side screaming at the other and the other side not saying anything.
Martine?
Well, I mean, part of it once you get to local levels, I think they're easier to deal with those things. And part of it is having some sort of resource, impartial resource that can help you convene people and put a different process to it. So instead of most of the public processes that we have set up, and school board meetings is another example of, people can walk up to the microphone one at a time, turn their back to the rest of the public in most cases to talk to the decision makers up on a podium, and get their 3 minutes to express their individual opinion. But there's no processes for those people to sit around and actually talk to each other and deal with those disagreements in a positive way. So part of it, you know, it kind of depends on where you are. There's more and more resources like mine, cropping up everywhere across the country. There's 51 centers that are part of the National Issues Forum Network I'm a part of. There's 30-odd that are part of the University Network for Collaborative Governance that I'm a part of. You go to ncdd.org, which is the National Coalition of Dialogue and Deliberation. It's the umbrella group of just all the people that are doing this work. So I think part of it is, if you post on the NCDD website and kind of listserv and say, hey, I'm having this problem, I need some help, you'll probably get help, because you'll have people out there that have the expertise and have the passion to try to spark better conversations and help communities solve problems.
And we're almost out of time here, but Peter, I mean, it seems what both you and Martine are talking about is, within if you break into individual groups, then you're not dealing with a kind of group psychology. And I think people often feel, and I think legitimately so, very empowered when they're part of a group and may say and do things that they wouldn't do if they were by themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the big lesson is that the format and the process makes a huge difference. I think people are very context specific, and people behave really badly in bad formats, and they behave really amazingly well in good formats. And we have quite a lot of knowledge of how to do that, but it's not being used in this healthcare debate.
Well, some things, more things to think about. Peter Levine, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. And Martine Carcassonne, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Martine Carcassonne, director of the Center for Public Deliberation at Colorado State University. He's associate professor of speech communication. Peter Levine, research director at the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service. That's at Tufts University. He's also director of the College's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. And he's written several books, including The Future of Democracy, Developing the Next Generation of American Citizens. And both of them joining us today on Radio Times, not to talk about what's in this healthcare legislation, but how to build consensus and dialogue when issues are difficult. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Leave us an email. Find out more about the program. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and you're listening to WHYY FM Philadelphia, your member supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. And this